Respectful obeisances. Bhagavate, unto you, the Lord, who are full of six opulences. Mahapurushaya, the supreme enjoyer. Mahanubhavaya, the most perfect realized soul, or the super soul. Mahavibhuti-patahe, the master of all mystic power. Sakala satvata parivritta, of all the best devotees. Nikara, of the multitude. Karakamhala, of the lotus hands. Kudmala, by the buds. Upalalita, served. Charana Aravinda Yugala, whose two lotus feet, Apanama, topmost, Paramestin, who are situated in the spiritual planet, Namate, respectful obeisances unto you. Translation. O transcendental Lord, who are situated in the topmost planet of the spiritual world, your two lotus feet are always massaged by a multitude of the best devotees with their lotus bud hands. You are the supreme personality of Godhead, complete in six opulences. You are the supreme person mentioned in the Purusha Shuka prayers. You are the most perfect, self-realized master of all mystic power. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. As you can repeat, O transcendental Lord, who are situated in the topmost planet of the spiritual world, your two lotus feet are always massaged by a multitude of the best devotees with their lotus bud hands. You are the supreme personality of Godhead, complete in six opulences. You are the supreme person mentioned in the Purusha Shukta prayers. You are the most perfect, self-realized master of all mystic power. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is said that the Absolute Truth is one, but is manifested in different features as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The previous verses described the Brahman and Paramatma features of the Absolute Truth. Now this prayer is offered in Bhakti Yoga to the Absolute Supreme Person. The words used in this regard are Sakala Satvata Paravrita. The word Satvata means devotees, and Sakala means altogether. The devotees who also have lotus feet serve the lotus feet of the Lord with their lotus hands. The devotees may sometimes not be competent to serve the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore the Lord is addressed as Parama Parameshtin. He is the Supreme Person, yet He is very kind to the devotees. No one is competent to serve the Lord, but even if a devotee is not competent, the merciful Lord accepts the humble attempt of the devotee. Okay? So, Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Mahanubhavaya Mahavibhuti Pataye Sakala Sattvata Parivrita Nikodakara Kamala Kudmalo Paralita Charanara Vinda Yugala Parama Parameshtin Namaste. So, Om Ganat Madandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So as Prabhupada points out here that the prayers are in ascending order. First, there is the Brahman, and then the Paramatma, and then Bhagavan. So everything happens in the right order. Of course, Bhagavan means to realize that God is a person with his own activities. And the other two realizations, of course, the Brahman realization means the energy of the Lord, the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, and the Paramatma realization is a little bit more personal, but Paramatma realization is based on the concept that the Lord exists basically to take care of us, because the Lord is in everyone's heart, as we heard yesterday, you know, Sarvasya Chaham, Riddhi Sanavishto, Matak Smritya, Ganaponam Cha. Krishna is in everyone's heart, and then also in the Bhagavad Gita, that's in the Bhagavad Gita, 15:15. Also in the 18th chapter, you have Radesha, Arjuna, Tishtati, Brahmanyan, Sarvabhutani, Yantra, Vrindani, Maya. The Lord is directing the wanderings of the living entities according to their desire, of course. And they are seated on a machine of a material nature. So you find Paramatma really is about us, because God is doing things for us. I mean, why is God in the heart? It's for us. Why is God in the atom? Because the atom is a spirit soul, and that's for us anyway. So then when you finally get to Bhagavan, you get to understand that God has his own life, which is interesting. So, of course, most people nowadays, they can simply think of God as just something, not even a person, not even Paramatma, but just something that's all-pervading, like the Brahman effulgence. And in India, of course, this is the most prominent understanding of misunderstanding, sorry, of the Vedic literature, that people think it's impersonal. And you can basically worship anything, and then you either become God, or you become, lose your identity, or realize there's no God, or whatever. And there's a very interesting story I was reading yesterday in this regard, in the Jiva Dharma, because I've been studying the Jiva Dharma recently. And it's about this great devotee, Lahiri. Lahiri Maasai. So, Lahiri, he was a materialistic devotee before, and he became a great devotee by the association of other great devotees. Actually, what I mean by materialistic devotee is that he would go to the kirtans and simply show off his ability to chant nicely. But he was still a devotee. I mean, he was like a Kanishtha Adhikari. But he was interested in getting appreciation from the other devotees when he was chanting the holy names. So that's still a devotee. It's not a Mayavadi, but it's a material devotee. So eventually, by the association of these different devotees, particularly one named, and he was also, another point is, he was also very attached to his Brahminical status, because he was born in a Brahmin family. So then he naturally gravitated towards a Vaishnava guru who was from a very high-class Brahminical status, who was previously a Mayavad sannyasi and then took up Krishna consciousness, and his name was, of course, Vaishnava. Das was the name of this renunciate person. He was a sannyasi first, and then he became a Babaji. So he took shelter of Vaishnava Das, became a great devotee, and what happened is that there were a number of tests that were, I wouldn't say inflicted upon him, that were arranged by Krishna to help him understand the importance of Krishna consciousness. One of the tests was that he had an old buddy, because we all have old buddies. You know, old buddies means old friends. Like ladies, they have old friends, or we have family members, or whatever. And we have some attachment to them, because basically we grew up with them, or they gave us something, or we got drunk with them in the past. Anyway, we have all these old friends, family, and everything like that. Of course, Krishna consciousness means to become detached from the family. So previously I told the story of how his sons tried to dissuade him from preaching Krishna consciousness or being Krishna conscious. But in this case, his best friend from his childhood came. And his best friend's name was Didyambar. And his best friend heard that Lahiri, of course, Lahiri at that time was known as Advaita Das. He got reinitiated, got a spiritual name, because he was living in a place where Advaitacharya executed devotional service in Shiram Mayapur. So his best friend, the Yamba, heard that actually my friend has just like become a devotee. This is horrible. I have to talk him out of it. You know. So, first of all, he didn't know if his friend Advaita would want to see him. So he went and took a boat to the bank of the Ganges, and he sent one of his servants to see if Advaita was interested in seeing him. So the servant went, and he approached Advaita, who was in the Kunja. Kunja means like a little forested area. And devotees would generally chant in a little forested area alone. They would chant at least 2 or 3 lakhs of names a day. So he went to him, and Advaita opened his eyes, because he was absorbed in the holy names. He said, "Yes, who are you?" And this gentleman offered obeisances to Advaita, and he said, "Yes, I've come because your friend, Digyambar, is, your friend Digyambar is in the boat in the river, and he's wondering if he can come and see you." And then Advaita naturally became very happy. "Oh, my friend, my old buddy from my school days, from when I was young. Of course, let him come immediately." So the servant, excuse me. So the servant went back, and he told Digyambar, "Yes, your friend is very anxious to see you." Digyambar came, and he went to see Advaita, and he said, "Oh, my dear friend Advaita, how are you doing? How are the old buddies doing?" You know, as friends get together, we have this mundane friendship. So many mundane friendships in this world. I mean, just sometimes I even look at the internet to see how some my friends from my college years are doing. You know, they have these websites, you know, like from different universities. I said, "Oh, where's this friend? He used to play the piano so nicely. I remember hanging out with him." It just, Maya comes into mind. Anyway, so, excuse me. So then what happened is that they had some discussion, and Digyambar said, "I remember when we were young, we used to play near this tree where Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, would have his pastimes, and we would say jokingly that don't touch the tree, because if you touch the tree, you're going to be tricked by the Vaishnavas. You're going to become one of them. So I remember you touched the tree, so what you said actually came true. You got tricked by the Vaishnavas." So he said, "If you like, I can take you out of this trap that the Vaishnavas have laid. And so, I can help you escape from the trap of the Vaishnavas." And so Advaita said, "No, I'm very much enjoying this trap. The Vaishnavas, you can't take." And then Digyambar thought, well, maybe he needs some philosophy. But try to understand, Digyambar was actually a Shakta. And he was worshipping the goddess Durga, who he called Nishtarini. They had an interesting discussion, because we understand that devotees are also Shaktas, because they worship Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is the Adi Shakti of the Lord. And Nishtarini, or the goddess Durga, different names of the same person. Our names, these are names of the expansion of the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the Lord has his internal potency, the internal potency. First of all, there's Radharani, and then she expands as the different gopis of Vrindavan and residents of Vrindavan, and eventually the Lakshmis and the Vaikuntha planets. And in this material world, she expands as Durga. So this Yambar, he was worshipping Durga. He was a great Shakta, and of course that meant he was eating meat. And so he would criticize Advaita. He said, "Look, you're not enjoying the good things in life." Sometimes we hear our friends say that from previously, or our mother or father. "You're not," of course my mother just says, "You got to get a real job." I said, "I have a real job." She said, I mean a real job. And of course, she means where you get money for it. So he said, you're not enjoying the finer things of life, like liquor and meat. I mean, you Vaishnavas, you're just like living there in a very niggardly fashion. Niggardly means like torn clothes, and, without enough food. And just like poverty's when you're begging. And previously you were just like, wow, you were so wealthy. You were going and giving Bhagavatam class and getting so much money for it. Because actually another thing is this, Advaita had revealed, and some of the other Vaishnavas too, they revealed that they had made their money. Actually it was Vijay Kumar later on. Not Vijay Kumar, it was, anyway, one of the other devotees. Advaita, Vijay Kumar. Anyways, one of the devotees revealed he was making his money from giving Bhagavatam class. And the Babaji said, no, you can't do that. That's not the proper thing. I mean, you have to make your money from some other means, not by preaching Krishna consciousness. So, anyway, so he was saying, you're just not enjoying the finer things of life, like meat and wine and women and all those other things like that. And so this whole discussion was going on, but then it became extremely blasphemous because he said, Goddess Durga, by the mercy of Goddess Durga, Nishtarini, you find Lord Vishnu and Shiva become manifest. So basically he was saying that the Shakti is the source of the Shakti Mam. The Shakti was the source of Krishna and everybody else. Wow. And so Dwaita was thinking, how can I get rid of this creep? You know, let me just offend him or something like that, offend his nonsense philosophy. So then he said, so you have a relationship with the goddess Durga, and she's like your mother. And Digyambara said, yes, she's like our mother. And Dwaita said, so, all right, so you worship her and everything. So what happens when you achieve perfection? And then Digyambara said the most obnoxious thing. He said, well, she becomes my wife. And I become Sadashiva. So Dwaita said, what kind of relationship is that? You know, you just, one day she's your mother, the next day she's your wife? I mean, this is obnoxious. So anyway, so they had this discussion basically back and forth, and Dwaita just wanted to just upset him so much that he would leave, and he did. So anyway, so generally people just have this tendency to worship the Shakti of the Supreme Personality of the Godhead rather than the Shakti Mam, the possessor of the Shaktis. So all these circumstances, like Advaita experience, not Advaita Acharya, but the Advaita in the story, and like we're hearing about King Chitraketu, are very shocking experiences that lead one to surrender more to Krishna. And I was thinking about this in regard to yesterday's class, where we were talking about how, in the case of Chitraketu and other devotees, that there's always like some traumatic or shocking or repulsive situation that pushes them closer to Krishna. And I was thinking about all the different instances, and I came up with like hundreds of different names from the Bhagavatam and other stories like that, where getting kicked or having some unpleasant experience actually forces you or forces the person to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, this is practically a common denominator in most of the stories we find of devotees in the Bhagavatam. Practically, it's hard to think of a story where, you know, they surrendered to Krishna and something traumatic didn't happen beforehand. I mean, like Parikshit Maharaj. Take that for an example. Parikshit Maharaj was just minding his business, being a king. And then all of a sudden, by the mercy of Krishna, he performed an activity that would naturally be considered offensive to the sage, Samukta Rishi. He actually put a garland, a snake garland, dead snake garland, around Samukta Rishi's neck. because Samagamisha didn't get up because he was in trance and he didn't receive the king properly. And then as a result, Sringi, Samagarishi's son, cursed. Everyone's running around. Not too many people, but anyway. He cursed Maharaj Parikshit. He said that you're going to die within 7 days from the bite of a snake bird. So based upon that curse, which could have been termed as a little bit traumatic, or at least a change in life, change in plans, obviously, if you discover you have some terminal illness or you're going to die within a few days, it's definitely a change in plans. So based upon that, he actually changed his whole life, took shelter of Shukadeva Goswami and heard the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's that one instance of a shock. Also the same thing, Dhruva Maharaj. I mean, if you see somehow or other, you see the naked face of reality. You understand? Something happens that really gets you going spiritually. And you see this practically in the life of all the great devotees. Something happens. Like even Prabhupada, his wife wouldn't cooperate. It was traumatic. His business was lost. It was traumatic for Prabhupada. Or even when Prabhupada attempted to preach in Jhansi, everything was taken away. His whole temple was turned into a lady's ashram, a lady bhavan. Can you imagine, I spent so much time opening the temple here, and then the mayor of Hillsborough decides that we want to turn this into a shelter for ladies. We're taking your temple away. And that's what happened. So, it's quite shocking. So there, even with Prabhupada, there's some shocking things that happen, some traumatic things that happen that push someone to carry out further the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or further surrender to the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, the Jamil was extremely shocking. With the Jamil, he saw the Yamadutas. You can't be more shocked than that. One day you're minding your business, dying, and you just like see these frightening creatures that were worse than any horror movie you've ever seen when you were young come after you. It's definitely going to get you to surrender to Krishna. So what I'm saying is that Krishna has this tendency in the lives of all these devotees, and of course our own lives too, to do something that's really painful and traumatic to push us closer to Him. I'm not saying that we want that. I experienced that many times in my devotional service. I mean, sometimes you're just minding your business, preaching, and there's some nice disciple, and the disciple turns against you and considers you his enemy. Hopefully none of you will do that, but anyway. So Ma Mantra one day says, whatever. And then, not Ma Mantra. But, and then it just forces you to take shelter of Krishna more, right? Because we're taking shelter of all these mundane relationships. Society, friendship, and love. And the body, and all those other nice things. And the body does that to you. One day you look at your body and it's old as the hills. You're so proud of your handsomeness or whatever. I mean, just like the other day, someone said, "Oh, you've gotten shorter." I said, "Oh my God, they're in Maya." You idiot! But then I... So the body presents you with all sorts of shocking things too, losing the hair, the gray hair, everything like that. So anyway, so this is something that you've got to be prepared for because it happens to every devotee. In the heavenly planets, it doesn't happen as much. That's why it's not so favorable for advancing Krishna. So some more examples, of course, of Prahlad Maharaj. You think of every single story practically in the Bhagavatam like that. There is some really terrible, shocking, negative, or at least, just like eye-opening occurrence that occurs to these devotees that really pushes them over the edge to surrender to Krishna. So Prahlad Maharaj, of course, he was subjected to all these tortures by his father. And he took shelter of remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Gajendra Mokshana, you know, Gajendra the elephant, he was just minding his business with his wives, you know, she elephants. He was bathing them, having a good old time, enjoying the water with his elephant wives. It's like that. I mean, it's like that for any of us. We're just like going on in our devotional service, just enjoying life. Isn't it nice? Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day. I got a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful day. You know, as that poem goes. And then all of a sudden, boom! Where did that come from? You know, so with Gajendra, it was like that. He was just like enjoying in the water, you know, swimming with his wives, the elephants. And he was thinking, how cute are my wives? They got really beautiful tails. So, look at their trunks, you know. You know, because elephant, you know, whatever species of life you're attracted to, whatever. I was just reading about bugs. When there was a certain type of bug, when the male bug and the female bug get together, the female bug chews on his body, so part of it's gone. So someone who's really successful in romantic affairs has practically the whole body chewed up by the time the end of the mating season. Hellish, isn't it? This is love. It's like, you know, of course, the description is also is like chewing on thorns, like the camel chewing on thorns, thinking he's enjoying life. So anyway, so getting back to the point of Gajendra, he was loving exchanges with his wives, and then all of a sudden this nasty crocodile comes, goes, bites him. And so what Gajendra did, he started remembering his prayers, because he was King Indra Jr. in the past. He had this Dati Smarana, he had remembered his past life. And he started to pray to Krishna, and then Krishna came and saved him, and liberated him. So there's another story. I mean, so, and even in Krishna Leela, in Vrindavan, you have the demons coming. You know, you think it's Vrindavan, everything should go nicely, isn't it? I'm in Vrindavan. There should be, you know, everybody should just be kumbaya, basically, you know, joining hands and smiling and kissing each other and everything like that and warm fuzzies. And then along comes all the demons. Every day there's so many of them. The Kaliya serpent, who ultimately is a devotee, Gasura, Palambasura, Bakasura. I mean, can you imagine if you tell the Christians in the spiritual world there's so many demons? The kingdom of God. Of course, in the actual Goloka Vrindavan, there's no demons, but there is devotees who sometimes act like demons or have the abhiman like that, but not actually demons. But in the Gokul Vrindavan, the pastimes that occur on this earth, there's actually demons. And it's traumatic. You know, there's a forest fire, and Krishna says, just close your eyes, and they all take shelter of Krishna. Or when Krishna jumps in after the Kaliya serpent, they're in complete anxiety. So in other words, pain, anxiety, distress are part of advancing in Krishna consciousness, even if you're in the spiritual world. So get ready. I mean, otherwise, everywhere. I mean, even, and of course, Krishna leaving Vrindavan, that's very traumatic and painful. So devotional service is one of trauma. That's the point I'm making here. And Chitraketu, of course, the story is he woke up after his trauma. You know, he offended Parvati and got cursed. And, of course, at the trauma, of course, in the beginning, Chitraketu, getting back all to the story we're reading here, Chitraketu lost his son. I mean, that's very traumatic after you tried with 10 million wives to lose the one son that you have. So, anyway, so that's the point. I can give more examples, like Narada Muni losing his mother. 5 years old, his mother just like died from the snake bite. And he had nothing. I mean, just think of practically every devotee that's mentioned. Practically every devotee that's mentioned in the Bhagavatam had some trauma that made them come closer to Krishna. Wow. So what does that mean for us? Yajaham anugrinami harishya tadanam shanai. Krishna says, if those who I especially favor, I give them trauma. In other words, I take away everything. So they're relatives, like in the case that I was just, relatives and friends, like the case I just mentioned of Digambar and Advaita Jas, they just reject you. They don't want anything more to do with you. They think you're weird. They think you're, you know, just chanting Hare Krishna. I mean, devotees shouldn't be more weird than they actually are. But anyway, I was just watching a video last night of Prabhupada coming and preaching at a Franciscan monastery. And the devotees were receiving Prabhupada, but in a way that looked pretty weird. Pretty weird. I mean, they were just jumping up and down. All these monks were just like with their hands folded. And then Prabhupada pulls up. But it's understandable. The devotees were very young. I mean, we don't want to act too weird. We want to attract. And Prabhupada, he didn't act weird, of course. He actually acted in such a way, because when they asked Prabhupada the question, what do you think about St. Francis? And Prabhupada said, who is St. Francis? What is his philosophy? And the devotees presented to Prabhupada, and the people presented to Prabhupada, that St. Francis' philosophy was that every living entity was a brother or sister. And Prabhupada opened his eyes wide, said, that is God consciousness. Something like first-class God consciousness. And then they all appreciated Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was expert in relating to people so they didn't feel uncomfortable. So we don't want to make people feel more uncomfortable than they already do. I mean, Krishna West is one of the endeavors to sort of like help people come closer to Krishna. And it's not that we're going to... I remember in the early days of Krishna consciousness, we were so fanatic that when we went on Harinam, there were people, people walking through the streets. And then we would go in circles around the individual people. I mean, I'm sure they were extremely freaked out. You know, we had the whole Harinam party. There was some lady, you know, some nice black lady walking down the street. And then devotees would form a circle around her and go around and around and around. The poor lady was probably having a heart attack. Like that. So we don't want to be too weird. But the point is that we have to expect people to not always appreciate, especially people that we're attached to. And Krishna will arrange trauma based upon our attachments. Pretty good. Anytime we try to enjoy, Krishna will arrange some interesting thing. Maybe not right away, but just wait, it will come. And then we just take shelter of Krishna's names. I mean, this is Bhagavatam. I mean, I was thinking about this yesterday when I was talking about how, you know, you have to have some like traumatic or eye-opening experience to surrender to Krishna. I said, in every case, in every person in the Bhagavatam, this happens. It happens. So, you know, why not us? Okay, on that happy note, any questions or comments? Yes.
It seems like that those types of experiences and examples and everything, including your own, are to emphasize or magnify our relationship with Krishna, but I'm still kind of curious, is it also about developing, I'm just curious, why do we have to wait?
Why do we have to wait? Because we're stubborn.
Should we take the initiative?
Yeah, it's better, that's what I always say, it's better before Krishna smashes us, it's better You know, there's two ways of learning the lesson. There's the intelligent way, where you hear and you do, and the unintelligent way is you experience and then you do. So, no, I mean, obviously we don't have to just wait till Krishna smashes, but we should understand our attachments are separating us from Krishna, and Krishna will make all the arrangements to pull those attachments, like a dentist pulls the teeth out, you know, it's very painful. So it's better to brush your teeth so you don't get cavities. That's a good example. Brush your teeth and floss on a regular basis. Otherwise, you're going to have to see the dentist and have painful experiences. So better to avoid the dentist. Yeah. But in any case, I mean, Krishna, we are attached to things, and sometimes, you know, tough love is the way that Krishna utilizes or works in order to bring us closer to him. And basically, you see this in so many cases. So many cases. I mean, look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. There's so much disease and stress and family members dying and, you know, intense stuff happening. And Prabhupada said, an easy life and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. Yeah, to give us, like with Arjuna. I mean, it was very traumatic what Arjuna had to do. You know, big wake-up call.